Welcome to Drive Time, the UCLA Anderson Fully Employed MBA Program podcast. My name is Dylan Stafford, and I have a very special treat this afternoon. Akshay Grover is a member, second-year student, a member of the FEMBA class of 2018, and he's just got a fascinating story. This is a global citizen that you would expect to be in class with at a school like UCLA. And we have a lot of global citizens. Specifically, what I appreciate about Akshay is we have two connections. He works for Siemens, which is where I started my career post-MBA. I was there for 6.5 years, so it's very near and dear to my heart. And then he has a sister who went to Texas A&M, my alma mater from undergrad. You're just going to learn a lot. At Siemens, Akshay works as the senior sales executive with Siemens Building Technologies, and he got into that job right after undergrad and has really ridden that job from the Middle East to California, all the way to being interviewed with Time Magazine last fall on a project, a very big and successful project that's really looking at how can government work more efficiently? How can we build our societies in a more energy responsible way? He's been on a global immersion. You're going to hear about that. He's been very involved on campus, both in extracurriculars. He's had leadership positions in clubs here. He's won a case competition with Net Impact. You'll hear about that. And then he's got a nonprofit. So we have a lot to cover. And it's just my pleasure to introduce you to Akshay Grover. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Dylan. It's absolutely a pleasure. And I feel really honored to be here.
Well, great. Well, and he's bearing with me because we started recording the podcast a moment ago and I realized that I hadn't turned on the button. So we're starting. This is our second time, so this is going to be very smooth.
I thought we were not telling that to the audience.
Oh, why not? It's more fun. Why don't we jump right in? So you were born in New Delhi, but you branched out pretty quickly. Why don't you tell people a little about your story?
I did. So I was born in New Delhi in India, and I moved out of India at the age of 18. I moved to Dubai to get my engineering degree. So this was an Indian school that had a campus in Dubai, and I started my four-year engineering degree right off the bat when I moved to Dubai. So I'm an electrical engineer by degree. Just the way we have the Global Access Program, GAP program here at UCLA, the engineering college had a program called Practice School, where in the last semester of your fourth year, you get to intern with Fortune 500 companies based on your GPAs. I was excited because I got into Siemens as a company that I could intern with. So I started working as an intern for them for Siemens Building Technologies, which was exciting in its own way because I got to work with some really cool and marquee projects in Dubai. I worked with the Palm Islands. I worked at the Atlantis Hotel, Palm Jumeirah. I worked at the Emirates Airlines headquarters, the Dubai World Airport.
Those are huge projects
for someone who's right outside of college, with just 4 years of engineering experience and not really hands-on experience. But that was fun because I feel like now the fact that I've worked on such huge projects, any other projects that I work from here on are just fairly easy to work on. It's an interesting place to be, Dubai. It's growing. It's as glitzy as it gets, and it's a very, very global economy. It's one of the most fascinating economies of the 21st century. I worked for Siemens for 3.5 years, and that made my stay in Dubai for around 7 years.
So that's amazing. And your school was actually BITS Pilani, so Birla Institute of
Technology and Science Pilani. So it's an Indian private engineering school that had a campus in Dubai. And one of the reasons I wanted to move to Dubai was, one, it's just a 3-hour flight away from home, so family's close by. And second,
you can't go home and do laundry on the weekend, but kind of close.
I have done that.
Oh, you have
done that for the first year, but I've actually done laundry, took a flight, and got all that stuff done.
Survival trips of the freshman year.
Exactly. It was my first step towards being global. Mm-hmm. Dubai, as we all know, is the melting pot of cultures.
Yeah.
It's as diverse as it gets. My engineering class had over 15 ethnicities and nationalities in my class, and we're not talking about business schools. We're talking about engineering schools, which made my 4 years in school really, really exciting.
Mm. Well, and earlier when we spoke, you said that, you know, you moved 8,000 miles for UCLA and that UCLA was a dream school for you. Those are high accolades. And I'm just curious, like, when did you start to learn about UCLA? Because we always hear people say, or we like to say as an institution, that those four letters, UCLA, mm-hmm. as they're pronounced in many parts of the world, they really do have a lot of weight. And so how did UCLA get on your radar screen originally, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, UCLA is big, I feel, everywhere, not just in the United States, but abroad. You know, if there's one school that everyone knows of, you know, be it in India or be it even in Dubai, it is UCLA. Right from high school, I had friends going to UCLA. I was watching Bruin games. I was watching football games and basketball games. And I had researched a lot online and, you know, taken those online those 360-degree views of school where you kind of see where what is. And I always had this aspiration. There was some connection. Somehow I felt like this is the school I want to go to, right? Sometimes you don't really have a reason, but you really want to achieve something in life. And UCLA happened to be that one thing for me. And no matter what I did and what direction I went to in life, I always had that dream at the back of my head. Yeah. And that's kind of what got me to, you know, to bring up the whole aspect of getting a part-time MBA at one of my performance evaluation meetings with my manager in Dubai. So here I was, 3.5 years of work in Siemens, my very first role, and all of a sudden, in one performance evaluation meeting, I brought up to my manager that I want to move to Los Angeles. I'll either get a full-time MBA, which means I will leave Siemens, or if you can help me move to Los Angeles within Siemens, I'll stick with Siemens and get a part-time MBA.
Nice. My
manager preferred the latter, which happened to be a really good decision for both of us, because I love working for Siemens. It's a great company. It's a global company. You know, mobility is very easy within the organization, even though it wasn't from the Middle East to the U.S. And I had to go via Germany HR to really move to U.S. That had its own. I was the first person to ever interviewed on Skype internally, and I was the first one to actually move from the Middle East to Siemens U.S. offices.
Wow.
Which was exciting because it kind of made me feel I'm important, but it got me one step closer. So from 8,000 miles, I was only 40 miles away from UCLA.
So where were the offices? Are they in Irvine or?
They're in Orange County in Orange Cyprus. County.
Okay, yes. In Cyprus. Okay, perfect. Oh, that's great. Well, let's kind of fast forward. So you let and kind of what maybe catalyzed our conversation. So, let's tell people about what you've been working on with the County of San Bernardino and how that's really opened up to being interviewed by Time. And I'll let you tell the story because you're more clear on the details.
Absolutely. So I work for Siemens here, Siemens Building Technologies here in Orange County. We work on energy efficiency, sustainability, building automation systems, cloud-based energy monitoring platforms, data analytics. UCLA happens to be one of our customers.
Really?
When it comes to air conditioning and monitoring energy usage for the campus. But I predominantly work with local governments, which includes cities and counties and municipals. And I work with local elected officials to help make government buildings such as city halls and public libraries more efficient, more sustainable. It's something that I really, really love. I feel like it has an aspect of engineering, it has an aspect of sales, and it has an aspect of giving back to the nature in the form of energy savings and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So the County of San Bernardino happens to be one of the biggest customers I manage out of this branch for Siemens. And it's also one of the largest counties in the United States. It's 20,000 square miles, which means if someone has to travel just to kind of change a temperature set point from one building to another, it could take over 90 minutes one way, which means that, you know, the
county bigger than a lot of the states on the East Coast.
It is. Yeah. It's even bigger than a few countries.
Yeah.
The County of San Bernardino facility staff, they were driving these 90-minute drives to just diagnose mechanical issues, right? They had uncomfortable building occupants at some point of time because the infrastructure was aging. They had high utility bills. They were not that energy efficient at that time.
Right, it's a hot county. It's physically hot.
It is at a location where the temperatures are really high. you know, they were paying for overtime hours, they were paying for fuel costs. And that's where, you know, Siemens came in and partnered with the county. The cool thing was, I feel like I started this project when I was in the first year of UCLA. And the key aspect behind this project was to really get different departments of the county together, which is hard in any government organization. So I was able to get the Information Services Division, which is basically the data center of the entire county, the Department of Facilities that manages all of infrastructure of the county, and the Department of Real Estate that manages all buildings in the county together in one room. And together we developed this whole technology roadmap, this sustainability plan for the county for the next 5 years, which included, you know, upgrading all of their building equipment, getting them to high-speed internet-based solutions, doing retro commissioning in their buildings, and getting kind of more out of their existing investment. The result was, you know, they were able to save over $500,000 in energy savings, natural gas, overtime hours, and they're still saving that money. Which means they're pumping this money back into, you know, into the economy, which can be used for so many other reasons. And these are eventually tax dollars. So we're better utilizing tax money for the county. And when we were doing this project, we were approached by Time Magazine, and they were right about the time when they were launching this new segment called American Genius. So if you go to Timing Studios, they have on their website, they have this page on American Genius, where they're going around the country and finding, you know, cool things done by cool companies and cool projects happening around the country. This happened to be the very first that Siemens did globally for Time Magazine. Once that happened, Business Insider magazine approached us because they felt like, you know, this is something that's changing in the whole government arena. And, you know, government taking big steps towards sustainability and energy efficiency is definitely big. So it's been a successful project, not just personally, but for the organization, for the government. And it really showcases how, if you have that ability to get people together, align objectives, and trying to meet that bigger objective of, you know, saving energy or having sustainable buildings, it can be done even though if it's government.
Oh, I love it. And we'll put the links to the Time Magazine segment, and there's a video interview and the Business Insider article. We'll put those below in the production notes for this interview that we're having, so people can read more about it if they'd like to. Wow. Okay. There's part of me that wants to talk about why America is better when we attract wonderful, talented people from around the world in response to some of our politics today, but I'll not go there. I'm just glad you're here. Thank you for supporting American Genius with your Indian, Middle Eastern educated life trajectory and making one of the larger counties in our country work more efficiently. That's a good thing.
It's a pleasure.
That's a pleasure. All right. Thank you for that. Well, Let's talk a little bit. So you've in addition, I mean, wow, I still can't believe you're only a year and a half into your program. This is you've accomplished a lot. So let's tell people. I know you're serving as a teaching assistant, a TA for Professor Terry Kramer, and you're working on, I guess, the first flex delivery of his course. Tell me, how'd you get to be A, where do you find the time? And B, tell our listeners a little bit about what it's like to be a TA and how you know what you're learning from that.
So I was able to take technology management, one of the electives, last quarter with Professor Terry Kramer, and I was in love with the class. I was in love with the curriculum. I was in love with the professor. Just the way he was able to articulate some of the things that we can readily imbibe and apply at our daily lives. You know, his course is about disruption. It's about disruption in existing industries, how Uber disrupted the taxi industry, how Netflix disrupted the whole blockbuster model. But, you know, he gets guest speakers from actual companies. So we had COO of Amazon Videos come in and talk about what they're doing to really match up and speed up with what Netflix is doing. And that was something really exciting. And for the very first time, I found out that I have an element within me that kind of pushes me to go into strategy, in a role that involves global corporate strategy. And that was really exciting. For the first time, I found kind of a move within me that kind of thinks I can move to a different aspect of business altogether. I did fairly well, and I was approached by a professor to be one of his TAs. So we're still going through that TA hiring process. Okay. But
it'll be a little quicker than HR in Germany, a little bit, I hope.
Yes. So, but it's for the first time that he's developing this this class in a flex format.
Nice.
And his class is very high demand, but it happens, you know, midweek when some of the people from outside of Los Angeles cannot attend because of work schedules. So it was just last week we were shooting videos and recording his classes at the UCLA studios, which was an amazing experience. You know, seeing professors, you know, live recording and how amazing they are that they can just stand in front of camera and still deliver as if they're delivering to 75 students.
Oh, nice.
So I'm really excited for that. It's my first TA role. And one of the reasons I took that role was, you know, definitely building a strong network with people who are interested in this arena. Professor Kramer himself is a huge resource. You know, you can always fall back upon him if you need help in any of the Silicon Valley related issues that are happening in today's world. But more importantly, it was giving back to school in some shape or form. I mean, we are FEMBA students, so we don't get so much of time on campus as full-time students. And there's only so much you can do to give back. And I felt like this is my way of helping, you know, one of the professors and helping UCLA give back. And I felt like my time would be valuable for a professor to really encourage more students to move into technology, move into strategy, and really bring about that change.
That's so fun. So yes, I don't know what, there seems to be a common theme. Many of the people that I'm interviewing for the podcast have been a TA, and I didn't know so many people chose to move their life around to find the time to do that. But one of those benefits is that you really get a great connection with,
yeah, you know, with the professor, with new incoming class, and you kind of get a behind the scenes experience of what, yeah, happens in classes. You know, you always see professors are all prepared and all, you know, they're all ready when they come to class. But what happens behind the scenes? You know, how they prepare for it, how the TAs help them prepare for stuff. I'm really excited for that experience this summer. And I felt like, what better use of my time this summer than being a TA?
Very good. Oh, I love it. And now you're watching. I think it's really fun too to see the. Okay, now let's take that and put it into the flex format. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be on the court helping him, you know, create a whole new pedagogy for the same content, but delivered in a new channel.
Exactly.
Well, another thing you've squeezed in, again, I can't believe the first 18 months, you've already been on a global immersion.
So I have.
You went to Germany, of all places.
Went to Germany.
Seems pretty synergistic if you work for Siemens.
Yeah. There were multiple reasons why we chose Germany. One, it was Germany. So
right.
It's Europe. The other was Professor Nico was coming on it, and he's as German as it gets. You know, we took his economics class during the core session, and when we found out it's Professor Nico and Dean Frasius coming along, I felt like this has to be a fun party. So the trip was to Berlin, and it was about economic environment and entrepreneurship in Berlin. So we found out that Berlin is the budding Silicon Valley of EU. So we went to, you know, a lot of startups, we went to a lot of incubators, we talked to actual real CEOs of successful companies, we went to the Leipzig business school and actually saw, you know, students in action at business school in Germany. It was a fun, action-packed weekend in Berlin. But before that, a few friends squeezed in a trip to Paris and Amsterdam, because of course, when you're traveling to Europe, you have to go to Paris and Amsterdam.
It's just over there.
Yeah, it's just right around the corner. A 3-hour flight away.
There's a 3-hour flight theme in your story.
It is. So we squeezed in that, and then we had a whole 1 week of Berlin, which was exciting. It was the first time we went to Berlin as a group from UCLA. So there are a lot of new things happening, a lot of new themes, really amazing guest speakers talking about different industries, you know, energy, healthcare, higher education, what the government is doing to promote startups. And it was a different experience than what you get in class, and I would highly, highly recommend you know, students to take global immersion you know, as often as it can, as you can. I'm definitely planning to take another global immersion you know, the next time it's around.
Because do you have an idea where you might go next time yet?
Anywhere, as long as it's a 3-hour flight away from a really cool destination. but yeah, I'm open. But I felt like you can actually kind of put things into perspective, the things that you learn in class. Mm-hmm. And the whole global aspect of immersion really attracted. I was able to then take a flight to Munich with our fellow FEMBAs for our first Oktoberfest. It was the very first day of Oktoberfest. And the same day, that afternoon, we took the S-Bahn to the Allianz Stadium for a Bayern Munich live soccer game. So that was my very first live soccer game in Munich. On my way back, I was able to stop at the Siemens headquarters in Munich, which is the very first sustainable headquarters for a German company in Munich. And back to Oktoberfest, wrapped up that day, took a flight next morning to Los Angeles, and we were in class for our next quarter the next morning.
Wow. So what was the total trip end to end? I mean,
15 days.
15 days, yeah. And you squeezed in Northern Germany, Southern Germany, Holland, and France.
Yep.
Yeah, that's moving at the speed of FEMBA. I love it. So you did Oktoberfest in the morning, went to the soccer game.
In the afternoon. Went back to Oktoberfest, took the flight next morning back to LA, and was in class.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. And you were telling me that you later had a Siemens pride point when you learned. So those of you who haven't been to Oktoberfest, you should go. It is a feat of engineering that these beer tents that they call them are literally 5,000 person temporary structures, and there are 12 of them, I think, on the Wiesn there.
True.
But Siemens automated the entire beer distribution center for the whole city of the temporary city of Oktoberfest.
They did, and I was just really curious when I came back, is, you know, how can they really create a feat of, you know, a temporary arena where, you know, so much of beer festing happens. Mm-hmm. And I was able to Google it, and I found out that Siemens actually automates the whole beer transportation that happens in Oktoberfest, and that made me really proud. I'm proud to work for Siemens, yes.
Yes, the logistics of Oktoberfest are really incredible. Just and you're hosting millions of people from all, you mm-hmm. know, all the Australians who come up for it. It's a cultural moment. So what a big week. And I don't think I knew that Berlin was really emerging as a Silicon Valley of the EU.
It is.
I went to Berlin once but I was mostly in Bavaria the whole time, mm-hmm. the 3 years that I was down there. But at that point, Berlin was just really cool, edgy nightlife and such. But
it still is. I mean, we went to the Berlin Wall. We did all the touristy stuff with Dean Frasius, you know, after the whole day of activities. I feel like his enthusiasm was amazing. I feel like he pushed us after classes to go to these touristy places and walk around the Berlin Wall and look at artwork around the city. But it was fascinating to find that Berlin is such a huge startup hub in the EU. They're even making people take classes, you know, if German is not your first language, companies are now offering German language support in order to attract people from around the world to work in Berlin.
Wow.
And their not so high cost of living mm-hmm. really makes them a very attractive area for startups.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they've got good structural underpinnings to attract talent.
And it takes less to open a new business and less time to open a new business in Berlin than it takes in San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, let's leave Germany and then traveling with Gonzalo. I've gotten to work for him for a decade. The man's amazing. I went to Hong Kong with him two spring breaks ago.
Awesome.
On one of the global immersions. He's just fun. He knows everything. Yeah, he's like one of the most well-traveled people I've ever met. But let's come back on campus. So you were also in Soma. So tell people about Soma. You had a VP role there, and a little bit about that. You that was your first year that you were.
Yes. So it was my first year. Soma is Strategy and Operations Management Association. It's a student club here at UCLA FEMBA. It's open to both FEMBA full time and FEMBA students. The position that I had was VP of Data Analytics. Since data analytics is something that I do as a part of my role, for sustainability, I felt like I could bring in some value, for companies that come and attract talent at UCLA, plus students in full time and FEMBA and EMBA. It was an amazing role because we could, you know, reach out to companies that are big in data analytics, get them to campus for career nights, and have distinguished speaker sessions. On data analytics, because that's something that everyone talks about, but it's really hard to comprehend for people unless you've gone through, like, you know, a base of what really data analytics stands for. And you can apply data analytics in different different fields, you know, not just energy. You can have higher ed and healthcare and, and government. All of them use data analytics in some shape or form. So we kind of tried to do that last year. We were able to reach out to a few professors and that came in and explained the whole concept to our cohort in Soma. So it was a great role. I highly encourage people to join Soma or any club that really attracts your profession or something that you really like to venture out. It was my way of kind of seeing how I can apply what I apply at Siemens to companies that are completely unrelated to Siemens and kind of get other people's perspectives on what I do.
One of the questions that I get a lot with people who are considering, FEMBA and they're also considering the full-time program is, we make a big deal that join these clubs. They're a wonderful way to expand your network, to learn more about right? Mm-hmm. Above and beyond what you learn in class. These are a way to round out your MBA experience. What's your experience being a FEMBA? Because I would assume most of the members of SOMA were full-time. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Okay. So how do they relate to you? How do you feel like you fit in? How do you, kind of get connected as a FEMBA student? What was your experience?
We as the board at SOMA, we tried to make, FEMBA SOMA as FEMBA friendly as possible, which meant like we had some sessions that were during during the daytime when probably FEMBAs cannot attend. But then there's some sessions that happen towards the evening so that we can encourage FEMBA students to come in and apply. We had VP of FEMBA relations that were responsible for taking care of just the FEMBA students and connect them to.
But that was not you. That was a different person.
That was a different person. Yes.
Okay. So there were two FEMBA officers. Were there any more FEMBAs?
Yeah. So that's how we. That's something that we started this year is when we kind of differentiated roles and wanted to support more FEMBA students. So starting this year is when we have, VP of FEMBA Affairs, someone who's who is a FEMBA, understands the whole, work that goes behind being a FEMBA, and then attract FEMBA students and make it more FEMBA friendly.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I love to walk people down the hallway behind Cafe Il Tram and just show them all the faceplates of the elected leaders of all the different clubs.
True.
Great. And do you think that the full timers in Soma, do they realize that you might be a lead for a future job? Are there people who are interested in Siemens? Do they ask you questions?
I feel like networking is really, really big, within any club, but especially like Soma, because strategy and operations and data analytics are really hot topics right now.
Yeah, that's where the jobs are.
Job search. Yeah. Right. So definitely look, full-time students look up to us, but at the same time, they bring in some really cool ideas because they have all this time outside of school that they can really bring cool ideas to the table. And together with our experience and their networking and their time, we can really evolve as a club. It was a great experience working with full-time students and kind of seeing their perspective towards things when we were just running from a work meeting to a club meeting to a class or to a case competition. It was fascinating to see different perspective from students just within the same school.
And I want to move to the case competition, but before we do that, like how many clubs did you join and how did you decide how many to join and which ones to join?
I focused my attention to just one club last year because
good.
I was doing all the other things that I wanted to. But I felt like coming from a non-American education, it was my first time understanding how clubs work and how electives work because we don't have that back home. And so I wanted to really dive deep into one club, give my best at what I do, and then see if that's something that I would want to do the next year. This year I'm trying to venture out into different clubs and see if I want to be a part of Entertainment Management Association. Maybe
interesting.
That's something that that I can do, or that's something that kind of piques my interest. So I'm going forward from this year, I'm using clubs as a way to kind of broaden my horizons outside of class and do something that I usually don't do.
Excellent. Oh, I love it. Okay. All right. Now, another thing you did. So you were on the winning team for the Net Impact case competition. That was this year or last year?
Last year.
So in your first year?
In our first year.
Okay. So tell people a little bit about that. What was that like?
So it was Net Impact case competition. the entire team was Femba 2018. It was our classmates. We came together, and we wanted to really get a different experience of UCLA. And we felt like starting and participating in case competitions would be a good idea. We did apply for a case competition before for SOMA. That time I wasn't a part of SOMA. It was with T-Mobile, and we did not win. And that kind of made us even more motivated to come back and prove that we can win.
Nice.
Despite our jobs and despite a busy schedule. And so we came together. We were lucky that we got a nonprofit that had a lot of potential, per se. So we worked with Gila Bay Aquarium in Santa Monica, which is a facility that's donated by UCLA to the city of Santa Monica. And with the new pier construction that's happening around Santa Monica, they needed to relocate their offices. They need to relocate their whole aquarium and kind of better manage their whole operation. And that's where we came in. We had people, you know, with finance background, with engineering background, and with sales background. I even inserted some energy savings, you know, in our whole plan. And
of course you did.
And as a result, we were able to save them over $300,000 in just operational savings by combining and consolidating their multiple offices in Santa Monica and leveraging the minimal leasing rates that City of Santa Monica offered to a nonprofit.
Wow. Now, you talked about with your earlier example, the success with the County of San Bernardino, you talked about saving $400,000, but I'm sure that's $400,000 against a much larger budget. For a nonprofit, a $300,000 savings, that's got to be huge.
So for San Bernardino, it was $500,000.
$500,000, okay.
It was $500,000 of savings in energy.
Nice, okay.
For Gila Bay, it was $300,000.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, both of them are noteworthy accomplishments.
In terms of, yes.
I could just imagine being an administrator with Gila Bay being like, thank you, please come back.
Yes, and it was basically just it was consolidating their offices. They had multiple offices.
And all the overhead.
And all the overhead. And they were paying so much of rent on an office when they could have just consolidated their operations and, you know, leveraged the $1 rent that City of Santa Monica charged them. And they weren't at that time. And we restructured. We had the whole AutoCAD schedule of how to really, you know, seat people. We used the whole new Google type open office concept for people. Divided the whole space into aquarium, into live aquarium exhibits, and then certain space for training, and then certain space for office people. And we were able to consolidate all of that into one facility and take the benefit of, you know, minimal rent that City of Santa Monica offers.
So you came up with this solution, and for this solution, you won the first place.
We did.
In the case competition. But how long did you actually, so this is 48 hours or 72 hours? How long was the case competition?
So we got from the time we got the lead to the end of case competition was 2 weeks.
Two weeks. Okay.
We had time to go visit the aquarium. So
okay. So this was a longer format.
Format case competition. We were driving up to Santa Monica, interviewing people around the pier to really, you know, find out if people really know about this and, you know, what would be the ideal position for, ideal location for the aquarium.
Wow.
We were interviewing the employees of Gila Bay Aquarium and understanding what would they like to see and what would benefit them and what would benefit them in attracting more customers and increasing revenue. That kind of formed a bond because, you know, it was a UCLA donated facility and then we were helping a nonprofit. It was an amazing experience. We're still in touch with them. We still do, you know, beach cleaning sometimes for
wow.
them, and we still visit the aquarium. Yeah.
And what have you heard about how much of the plan have they been able to execute, or do you know? Is it too soon to tell?
So the city is still working on the pier modification. So
okay.
Once that happens, that's when the project will go underway, and we'll be more than happy to help them out, you know, even outside of UCLA.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That is so much. Yeah, it's fun to see the results of our work make
it
a
is.
Difference for someone in
it
real
is.
Time.
It is. And it was all time. It was purely time. All we did was carve out time to really go understand, you know, what they really need and understand what they really want from this whole case competition, you know, rather than just considering them just another entity or,
mm-hmm.
you know, part of the case. It was more of kind of building that relationship with the owners, with the people who run that organization, with the people who come, the kids that come and, you know, want to see certain things. I feel like it was basically just devoting time to a customer per se, and then getting more out of out of the case competition. I'm really happy that we were able to help them out. But we were also in some shape or form lucky because they had such a huge potential, you know, in these savings. It was just that we had a smart group of people that was able to figure out the solution for them.
Well, we're coming to the end of our podcast, and we have covered so much because you have done so much. It's fantastic. So we're kind of saving the best for last. So you have a nonprofit side of your whole person that you're really kind of, that's kind of evolving, I think is how you told me. So I want to talk about that, and then I want to hear some of your own productivity tips and tricks. So why don't you tell people about the nonprofit work that you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm a part of this nonprofit Buddhist organization that has over 12 million practitioners in 192 countries. And it's basically based upon the philosophy of being selfless, you know, and thinking about people outside of yourself. And we all strive for two things, and that's world peace and nuclear disarmament.
Mm.
The organization is divided into, you know, different age groups, and I happen to manage the youth for the South Orange County region, which is an interesting experience in itself. You know, one thing that everyone asks me is, you know, why did you go to UCLA, or why do you want to get an MBA? You know, when you're at a good company in a good position. But I always feel like, you know, the FEMBA program at UCLA has provided me with this fertile ground, so to speak, to, you know, where I can really amalgamate what my professional experiences were, and, you know, coupled with just the practical perspectives that I've gained and the expertise of the professors. And that's kind of enabled me to generate a substantial impact, immediate impact, not just at workplace, but also at a nonprofit. I feel like if you can manage, youth, hundreds of youth to work for a nonprofit cause, I think it's very easy to manage people in a Fortune 500 company where everyone's driven by salaries and commissions and money. So I feel like I remember when we used to come for admission interviews, and I did not miss even a single admission event because UCLA was the only school that I applied to. You know, you always talk about, you know, the impact, the ROI that an MBA program at UCLA can bring. And I feel like it's not just restricted to your workplace. It kind of opens up to different aspects of your life. You know, applying that to a nonprofit organization makes me really happy. We actually have a club at UCLA for full-time students for this organization. And the organization's called SGI, and it stands for Value Creation. And it's all about creating value, not just in your life, but also others' lives.
Wow. That's so great to kind of marry what you're learning about making the world work better from your professional career to a nonprofit scenario where then you can impact the next generation.
True.
That's, you know, Dean Olien likes to talk about leaders who lead lives of significance, and you're well on your way. And you only applied to UCLA. Okay, good. No, that's just a good plug. Well, as we get to the end here, you know, you're balancing work with school, with a very active extracurricular life, with, you know, a philanthropic nonprofit perspective. So how do you do it all? What are some things that you're learning about yourself that are working for you that you might want to share with others as they're also trying to improve their, you know, their professional ability to maintain their energy and pick the right topics and stay productive?
Yes, and that's really interesting, because right before getting into FEMBA, you don't think you can squeeze in a business school program, and then all of a sudden you're in FEMBA and you can find time to do extracurriculars at school, and then all of a sudden you're doing school, work, extracurriculars, and you have time to, you know, get in a whole nonprofit organization. And it's interesting how you can squeeze so many things in 24 hours. And one thing that I've really learned in the last 2 years at UCLA is I feel like I've tried to focus on being a smart worker than a hard worker.
Mm.
I've kind of focused on those 20% of the things that can get 80% of my work done, and being more effective than what I do has kind of given me and freed up a lot of my time. It has been stressful, you know, definitely it has been stressful. But at the same time, one of the things that I really focus on in life is, like, you know, active and inactive aspects of your life have to be in sync. You know, with all the smartphones and smart homes and smart cars that we keep on talking about, I feel like we're always on the move, always on the run, you know, checking our emails and texts and CCLE and everything that happens. But, you know, finding time for that, you know, for being inactive or just being still is, mm-hmm. is really, really crucial in kind of balancing and finding time for things. So the first thing that I do when I get up every morning is carve out 45 minutes when I just go for a walk or go for a run. And that's my me time, right? Mm-hmm. I don't check my phones. I don't even look at my laptop. I only focus on my me time. And that kind of gets me into the groove for the rest of the day because I've already done something for myself, right? Mm-hmm. I've given something that I deserve just in the first 45 minutes of my day. Mm-hmm. And going forward, I can, you know, take that forward to, you know, at work or at school or activities. So maybe one thing that I would recommend everyone would be to balance your active and inactive time. Find time for stillness, you know, is really crucial in today's time. And, you know, not looking at your complete to-do lists. You know, we look at to-do lists and get overwhelmed, and I used to get overwhelmed all the time, but I've kind of started looking at, you know, one solitary task at a time, you know, mm-hmm. giving your best and moving forward, and just staying happy, being humble, you know, being hungry for success, because you only have 3 years at UCLA. I flew 8,000 miles. How can I maximize my 3 years? What can I do? I'll have all the free time after 3 years when there's no FEMBA program. How can I get the most out of these 3 years? And the clock's ticking. That kind of pushes me to do more and more. You know, driving from Orange County to school itself is a battle. But
beloved 405.
Our beloved 405. That's where your podcasts help.
Good.
That's where your podcasts help. It's, you know, it takes up. It helps me save 45 minutes because I'm listening to what my peers are doing, what my mm-hmm. colleagues are doing, what other people in the school are doing to save time or better time management. And we get to know, you know, our fellow peers more intricately. So thank you once again for all of that. And yeah, that's my 2 cents on how I've managed the last year and a half, 2 years.
Well, I think you have the results. So you've created the results. Everybody loves results, and results always come from our actions. And you have a smile on your face, you know, which is different than just holding your breath and running like heck and, you know, being a sprinter in the middle of a marathon. Like, that's not sufficient. You know, you do have to pace yourself, I think, for FEMBA specific, but for life in general. And the fact that you have a smile on your face, that you still have time to give, you have enough time to give to your nonprofit commitment, your philanthropic commitment, that's a real testament to be doing that during school. And you know, the Time Magazine section is American Genius, and as I said a moment ago, you know, I'm grateful that America has you here as a contributor for a period of your life, however long we'll see you. You're probably going to go keep jet-setting around the world is what I predict, but who can say? So it's been a very, very much a pleasure to share this conversation, Akshay. I appreciate you, you know, coming forward and letting me know these good things. And we'll have the links here at the bottom of our podcast where people can read more about the Business Insider and the Time Magazine. And be curious to see what the second half of FEMBA brings for you.
Definitely. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks everyone for listening, and don't know how we'll top this next time, but we will do our best. But today's guest has been Akshay Grover, Senior Sales Executive at Siemens Building Technologies, and coming up towards the end of his second year of FEMBA, he's part of the class of 2018, so look him up on LinkedIn or reach out, and we hope to have you listen to another podcast in the very near future. Thank you.